You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 10:59. Coming up next is the Bike Show. The Bike Show brings you news and views of cycling in Oregon and beyond. But first, this from KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Development Committee will meet the first Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Poll Disclosure on Friday, October 4th from 4 to 7:30 p.m. at the AWOL Dance Collective Space in Portland. Poll Disclosure is a full-length circus theater show using aerial acrobatics as a conduit for storytelling. The artists will unfold the story of two women and their journeys through healthy and unhealthy relationships featuring live, original cello music. The artists will hold space after the show for discussion. Again, that's Poll Disclosure, Friday, October 4th from 4 to 7:30 p.m. at the AWOL Dance Collective Space, 513 Northeast Schuyler Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're tuned in to community-supported KBOO Community Radio. Coming up next is the Bike Show. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven natural foods cooperative open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a weekly farmer's market every Wednesday year-round. Located at Southeast Tippett Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years. Online at peoples.coop. Good morning and welcome to the KBOO Bike Show, coming to you from the KBOO studios in Portland, Oregon at 90.7 FM. My name is April Streeter, and with me in the studio is my co-host, Alon Robb. Good morning, Alon. How are you?
Good morning, and I'm as well as could be in these challenging times.
Okay. Our engineer today is Claire Risciotto. Thanks, Claire. This morning, we're going to tackle two very different bicycle topics or bicycle-related topics. The first half of the show is about cats and dogs on bikes. Seriously, Portland is a pet lover's paradise of sorts, and we'll tackle the pros and cons of bringing your furry friends with you on the bike. The second half of the show, we will discuss how Portland's thriving small business called GoBox is successfully attacking the problem of fast food plastic waste and using an electric bike fleet as part of the way to do so. And before we introduce our first guests, here are a few important news items from across the cycling universe. The Seattle Times reports that the Seattle City Council approved new bike lane requirements and called for more funding. The council members unanimously approved an ordinance requiring the Seattle Department of Transportation, SDOT, to build protected bike lanes anytime the city does a paving project worth more than $1 million, and when those lanes are included in the city's long-term bike plans. Seattle's Bicycle Master Plan lays out a long-range roadmap for where the city plans to build bike lanes in the future, but those projects can be delayed or derailed when it comes time to actually fund them. Many bicycle advocates and several council members were angry by the decision of newly elected Mayor Jenny Durkin, caving into pressure from some residents upset about the loss of 40 parking spaces, to reverse plans to build bike lanes on 35th Avenue Northeast, a street where 198 people have been injured since 2004. Councilmember Mike O'Brien, who sponsored the legislation, said the bill was meant to prevent similar situations from happening. The council also approved a resolution calling on the mayor to find more funding for bike lanes, particularly in South Seattle, and asking SDOT to plan new on-street parking for rentable bikes and eventually electric scooters. Lastly, here's a story from Eagle Point, Oregon. A cowboy lassos a would-be bike thief. As a man tried to escape with a bike in a Walmart parking lot in Eagle Point, Oregon, a bystander, or actually a man on a horse, sprang into action. Rancher Robert Borba was loading dog food and a tent into the back of his pickup truck and horse trail when he heard a woman yelling that someone was stealing her bicycle. Borba quickly brought out his horse, Long John, and pursued the thief. As the thief was having trouble shifting gears, he ditched the bike and tried to flee on foot, but Borba said that the suspect's look of surprise when he realized he was being chased by a man on horseback was priceless. Borba grabbed his rope and lassoed the man around his ankles, causing him to fall to the ground. "I use a rope every day. That's how I make my living. If it catches cattle pretty good, it catches a bandit pretty good." The thief was in custody, and the bike was then returned to the owner. So there you've got the news, and now we will move on to our first guest. Our first guest today is Sarah Stout. By great coincidence, both of our guests today are former KBOO Bike Show co-hosts, so it's an interesting alumni gathering today at the studio. Sarah is an artist who's been living and biking in Portland for over 30 years. Her current canine companion, Higgs, has been an enthusiastic bike rider since 2014. Sarah is a founding member of Shift to Bikes, the organizing body of Pedalpalooza here in Portland, as well as the World Car Free Network. She's been an advocate of social equity and sustainable mobility for decades, melding community development, artistry, and grassroots activism. She was active in Critical Mass, the visibility and advocacy movement, and a founding member of City Bikes. Higgs is also here in the studio with us today. Good morning, Sarah, and good morning, Higgs. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks. Nice to be here.
So let's start out with some questions. Tell us a little bit about Higgs and how you came to take him with you on your bicycle.
Well, Higgs is about 17 pounds, and I had a dog before Higgs who was near 50 pounds, and I spent 17 years with her. She was a wonderful, active dog. She started off running next to me, then she learned to be in the trailer. She rode in a cargo bike. She did some basket riding and bike camping, long distance, a little bit of everything. And I did learn that it was challenging to tote such a heavy dog on trips on bike. And I thought, well, maybe next time I'm going to get a lighter weight bike ready dog. And that is part of, I was used to traveling by bike and I knew I wanted that. So the smaller dog seemed like a good choice. So I thought about that as a factor. And it took me a long time to get over my first dog's death.
I understand.
And suddenly it became time. It was 2 years later. Higgs was, I saw his picture in the Humane Society. He was 2 years old. I thought that was a bit cosmic. He was listed as a Tibetan Terrier, which my childhood dog was definitely not a Tibetan Terrier. He was some kind of scrawny, crazy-looking mutt. But everybody, people try to guess your dog's their origin is, what is it? Oh, he's a Tibetan Terrier. So it was a little bit of a joke in our family, like, no, he's just
a mutt.
He's just the shaggy guy that we have no idea where he came from. So Higgs was at the Humane Society, and I was charmed, and I went and I met him, and I was ready.
Okay.
And before I get to the questions, I'd just like to mention a little dog in my life who's probably listening to the show right now, Gino Nugget Bartali. And when people ask us what kind of dog he is, I mention various breeds, but also say he's 100% a lion because he really has that personality. I know Higgs a little bit, but for those of our listeners who have not met him yet, and hopefully his picture will be on a website, can you describe his personality a little bit? What kind of a dog is he?
Well, Higgs is very mellow. When I went to visit him at the Humane Society, I was trying to be quite rational. I had thought about it, and I wanted to make a very, serious choice about it. And I did a bit of like my own little personality test. Is he going to be okay with me picking him up? Is he okay with, we went for a little walk and other dogs, he passed other dogs and he thought, oh, no problem, other dogs, no problem. I'm busy smelling the world. And then we walked inside and a little mob of young kids came up and they just petted him every which way, and Higgs said, yes, children, whatever. This is fine. We're just walking around. This is wonderful. So he seemed really easygoing, and I thought that's just fine.
So before we get to how you have Higgs on your bike, maybe I think it'd be really fascinating for our listeners to hear why you wanted to have Higgs or a dog as a kind of companion while biking.
Well, I bike, so that's how I go, and that's my preferred way, and it's just my lifestyle. So, and I love biking, and to provide a way for a dog to sit there and experience the world outside. My elderly dog couldn't barely walk in the end, so it was a joy to put her on the bike, and she could still get around, and people could talk to her and all the stuff dogs like. And I just knew that if I were to have a dog, that would be something that I would want to adapt my dog to.
And as I ride my bike, I notice more and more people with dogs. I've maybe seen one or two cats, but mostly dogs on bikes. Some would say that that's a sign of a more mature bicycle culture or attitude to animals. Would you agree with that?
Well, I feel like people love their dogs, and a lot of people are biking. And if you bike and you have a dog or a cat, you might need to transport them in that way. And so it's either a necessity, it's also a fun thing. So.
Mm. Okay, so maybe we should get into a little bit about the how. When you first got Higgs, did you already have a methodology for taking him on the bike, or was it a little bit figured out as you go?
Absolutely figured out as we go.
Okay.
I think anytime you're interacting with the creature, you sort of have to ask them, how about this way? Not this way. How about this way? What about here? How's this work? And front basket was my first try. And it's a good first try because you sit right next to the dog and you can give food, and it's effective in like knowing, does he enjoy it? Is it okay? Is it, you could hold him, you can see if he likes it. And we just took it really, really slow on the front basket.
And do you feel that the front basket is safe? I mean, what happens if, heaven forbid, you make a sudden stop? Or,
well, there's different ways of making things safe. And I feel like at first, to have your dog tethered so that there's sort of a seatbelt effect, a harness with a hold. But you don't start off, oh, let's go out on Foster or on some busy road, even any road that has any cars. It should be in a safe place. So just common sense, really, just making sure. And the front basket, it adds a steering element.
Instability.
And he was pretty happy in the front basket. And it's a good spot for him. He likes the front. He gets to see what's happening. He's high. He liked it. But I actually found that the strain on my upper body in the stabilizing the bike, because you turn it and you have to stabilize it, so it takes some upper body strength, and also just lifting him that high distance, I had a little shoulder pain, so
okay.
I was trying to adapt to what would work for me, and kind of happened upon, I was fixing a friend's extra cycle, which has sort of a low mounting rear platform. And he travels in a basket really well. So I was fixing it, and then I was going to deliver it to my friend, and I put the basket on her extra cycle and just strapped it in. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is the perfect way. It doesn't feel that funny to have extra weight on one side. It's lower, so you don't have to lift as high. And you can strap it right into the extra cycle. So I sort of have extra cycle envy. I don't have that, but I built sort of a sidecar adapter for my bike. And he travels in the rear, and it's easier to steer.
Okay.
And it's easier to lift him. So for me, that's what's working now, and it seems to work well for Higgs.
Okay. So I think I'll summarize. You went through a couple of the options, but I'll summarize for listeners who might want to be getting into taking their dog with them what some of the recommendations are to try it out. And baskets and carriers are suitable for carrying smaller dogs, and usually attached to the handlebars or the back rack of a regular bicycle. Specialized dog trailers, which you didn't mention, are suitable for carrying medium to larger dogs. And of course, the quality and the features go all over the place, but there are quite a few options out there. A good indication of quality is the warranty, which can vary from 30 days to lifetime. Then there's long-tail cargo bikes, which you said, Sarah, and they're similar to normal bikes, except the back wheel has been moved back about 15 inches, so the extended area behind your bike seat allows for more storage options, a bigger basket, and a bigger dog. and maybe the recommendation is around up to 30 pounds for that option. Trikes often have the advantage of a cargo area in front of you, allowing you to keep an eye on your dog. And as you mentioned, Sarah, some dogs like that to be up in the front and to be able to see what's happening. And these heavier frames of trikes could be more suitable to flat and undulating terrain. Sorry about that. Which option you choose kind of depends on your budget, where you plan to ride, the terrain you'll be riding on, and your dog's size, and especially your dog's personality. So some dogs really don't like the feeling of being confined, and others find it secure and relaxing. So I think it's super important, and maybe we should talk about this a bit more, to ease your dog into the life with the bicycle and start with short trips somewhere for fun so that they have a positive experience. Did you do that kind of moving Higgs from shorter to shorter rides to longer rides over time?
Yes, I did. I started with that front basket, and I would just walk with him in the basket and then take him off. Very short. And then a little bit of riding and then stop. And I actually walked to work at that time with Higgs, and it was near an hour walk, so which I actually found to be a delightful way to go. If everyone had time to walk that far every day, it was pretty fun, but biking a little faster. So I just would carry, walk the bike, and then put him in. I did try an enclosed burly trailer, and that was especially good if it was raining, because it's already that way. I've now built a rain cover for his basket, but it's already made that way. And just for an emergency, I thought I should have something where if I need to take him to the vet or I have to do something, then he's in a place where he could be warm, he could be dry, and he's safe.
And comfy.
And he can't get out. So if it's like an emergency, you're like, you are in there, I'm sorry, but here we go.
Yeah, exactly.
And Kino, the little imp that blesses my life with his divine presence, when he hears a word, when we say bicycle, he jumps into a chair, and then he jumps into the milk crate in the back. And we usually have him in the milk crate in the back, and then, you know, we tie the leash, and then we have another metal kind of structure. But that, for that, we have to have another person riding behind just to make sure. But he seems to like it that way. And
so the
put
metal
a little
structure,
pillow,
would you consider that to be a harness or...?
Well, he's tied with his leash to the milk cart, but he could see the world from the back over there, and we have a little pillow for him.
Okay.
That he likes.
Comfort measures.
Yeah, and bringing kibbles along seems to be a way. So you've gone on a few longer rides with him, camping trips even?
Yes, not especially long, but an 11-mile ride from Tillamook to Cape Lookout.
So and how did that work out? Was that?
It works great. It does help in the beginning, especially to have a friend who's going to bike with you. So something happens, they could be behind you. Maybe they could even carry a little extra of your stuff. Once we're sure it works, actually biking around a campground is an excellent way to get used to biking with your dog. And I biked with Higgs around Cape Lookout, and no seatbelt, and he jumped out to chase a rabbit, and that's really the only time he ever jumped out. I think he jumped out, and then he thought, oh no, jumping out is not very great.
So at that time, did you think you needed to invest in a harness, or were you pretty sure that that was sort of a one-time occurrence?
Well, I think this is an interesting personal choice, because either you're going to tether your dog in there and you're going to crash and your dog will be tethered in there, which, I mean, you could crash. That could happen. Mm-hmm. And there's advantages and disadvantages to being tethered in. I choose not to use the tether, but I also choose to go on the very quietest roads. And I simply don't go in a place where he's going to jump out and there's going to be a big traffic situation. And these things happen whether you have a dog or not. And it's not you want to prepare, but it's not something that's going to happen.
And
all
when
the time.
And when you get to a store, you want to go into a store, a restaurant, or the library, what do you do with Higgs? Can he come in with you?
Well, generally, if I'm going somewhere, the library, that's not a place a dog is welcome. So I just leave Higgs to mind the house, and he doesn't come. Some places, restaurants are pretty good about having an outside place, and he loves to sit under your chair while you're eating. Favorite activity.
We've been speaking with Sarah Stout about dogs and bikes. Thanks so much for coming to the studio with your dog. So I do have a question about that, because I have seen that some sort of beer garden type places in Portland, taverns, etc., that they have, that they only have a really limited time for dogs because they had they found there were too many dogs and too much noise, and so if there it was a noisy location, that was, have you found that to be an issue, or have you seen that there's been an increase in people bringing their dogs on the bikes and then having them with them at all times?
I feel like that's a hard one to note the increase, but I know that restaurants respond to the idea that people do want to bring their dog, and they'll have the dog-friendly patio, and it's not going to work. You know, the more dogs there are, the more likely that something's not going to go quite right, but it's about, you know, adapting to each different situation and what you're tolerant of. I've been in the Lucky Lab where it's kind of sort of dog mayhem.
Yeah.
And there's different tolerance. Some dogs are like, wow, lots of action. Wow, this is totally awesome. And some dogs are like, wow, lots of action. Let's go home.
Yeah.
And personally, I don't like to listen to a bunch of dogs barking or to protect my dog from unwanted sniffing and such. Mm-hmm. So that's not relaxing for me. So I'd rather take my picnic and go to a park and just let it be that way. But it's personal preference and what the people will allow and what works for the restaurant.
Yeah.
And at the Lucky Lab, dogs could roam anywhere, inside, outside?
I'm pretty sure they're supposed to be on a leash, mm-hmm. and they're supposed to be well-behaved, and they're on the patio. Mm-hmm. And the patio may be, like, heated or accommodated, seems to go year-round, or maybe some dogs are kind of well-built for the winter, and they get the nice coat on already. Hmm.
So I know, Alon, that for you, your new pet friend has really helped you emotionally get over the loss of your cat. And I'm wondering, Sarah, if you feel like Higgs is an important emotional support for you.
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I love having a dog. I've just always loved it, and it's a joy to have a dog, and it makes me happier. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And Portland is definitely a place where dogs and cats are respected, maybe revered. I don't know. I mean, coming from the Middle East, there are a lot of people who, when I describe my relationship with the cat Yashin, the dog Gino, they think I'm crazy. You know,
yeah.
It's like dogs are there to work. They eat scraps. I mean, our dog eats organic food. I don't always eat organic food. So it's definitely a dog-friendly city.
Which, in some ways, I think there were some people who would say we've gone too far. We've gone too far with the emotional pet support. And, I mean, it has to be admitted that dogs and cats have a carbon paw print, let's say, rather than a carbon footprint. And it's definitely not as big as a human carbon footprint, but it is it. I mean, I don't know. Can we support a world where everybody has a pet?
Well, I'd just like to point out that the emotional support, like the technical term there, is highly misunderstood, and it's actually about having a dog in your very own home. That's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
It,
okay.
If you're denied housing because you have a dog and you have an anxiety issue or another mental health issue that's helped by your dog and your doctor says so, then you're legally required, if your dog is well behaved, not going to chew the house to pieces, all the stuff about being a good dog, it's about being allowed in your home.
Okay.
It's not anything about being allowed in a cafe, a library, a hospital, whatever. It has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
And I think people sort of enjoy blurring lines because people like to do what they want, but
right.
It's not really what it's about.
Okay.
And unfortunately, the press, reports on sensationalist cases, like recently a little Shetland pony was termed an emotional support animal and was flying on a plane. And every once in a while, you see a dog at a supermarket or...
Right.
You know,
well, the emotional support dog, for some reason, which I think would be for the pet show, perhaps, mm-hmm. to investigate why, it extends to airplanes.
Mm. Yeah.
Homes and airplanes, not the supermarket, not the MAX train, not the bus. They have rules for you can take your dog in the bus if you have it in a carrier.
Right.
There's ways to bring your dog on public transit, but it's mm-hmm. not about having a badge or a doctor's note for the train or the ferry or whatever.
Okay, so you're saying that a support animal, that there are clear guidelines about having your support animal in your home and also on an airplane when you might need to travel, but otherwise there aren't strict rules about...
Not for an emotional support animal.
Okay, good to know. All right, so that's a good place to take a little break. You're listening to the KBOO Bike Show, broadcast from the KBOO studio in Portland, Oregon. In the studio are myself, April Streeter, Alon Robb, and our guest, Sarah Stout, and her dog, Higgs. So before we get back to a few more questions for Sarah, Alon and I, in putting together this program on pets on bikes, we looked at an awesome book called Saving Lucy. And one of the reasons I think this is such an interesting book for potential pet on bike people to listen or to check out is because it really describes how the author Isabel Holmes biked around the world and recovered from depression and kind of maintained her ability to stay even keeled with her dog Lucy with her, showing such unconditional love for the kind of big adventures that can happen when you're on your bicycle. So we will put that into the show notes on the KBOO Facebook page, and you can check out that book, Saving Lucy by Isabel Holmes. So we thought that maybe we would, in the latter part of talking with Sarah, that we would learn a little bit more about her dog, Higgs. And
Yeah, I'm curious about the name and a little bit more about his personality. And I'd also like to say that the use of the word pet, some people might find objectionable. There's no ill intent meant here. Companion animals, dog, cats, whatever you want to call them, they deserve and our love and respect.
Awesome.
Well, Higgs's name was... first hashed up when I was with my parents and they had gotten two dogs and we were just thinking of names for their two dogs, and I thought they should have like a pair type of name, so we came up with all different kind of ideas. And my dad is a bit of a science buff, so we did go towards Higgs and Boson, and we thought settled on Ebb and Flo, which
okay.
I thought was quite nice since they live right by the water. But when I got my dog, is really the last thing I was thinking about. There was a lot to manage with a new dog. Oh, Higgs, fine. Okay, moving on. And one idea I had with naming him that was that the Higgs boson is a really obscure sort of interesting topic.
Yes.
And I thought, well, if I name my dog Higgs, then I'll have interesting conversations because the science people are going to tell me what this is, and to hear different versions of what it means is
awesome.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
And even now for me to say what it means is quite hard because I don't have the scientific background, and also you'll see that there's 1,000-page books written about this. But right about the time I got him, they had just proved the existence of the Higgs boson, which is a subatomic particle. And the theory is that when the Big Bang happened, that energy passed through the Higgs field, which is an esoteric, very, I can't explain what it is, it would transform from energy into matter.
Wow.
So it's a bit of an unbelievable thing, but basically it's a subatomic particle. It seemed appropriate. He sort of has a sort of intellectual, scientific kind of look to him. And he is. He's
yes.
not the sportiest guy. He's more the...
intellectual, academic.
Bookish.
Type.
You can picture him working on theories and proofs and such. So it seemed appropriate. And aside from the fact that sometimes people can't hear the H and they ask me, pigs? Pigs? Figs? Yeah, he likes figs. He likes figs a lot. But no, his name is Higgs.
Okay, awesome.
So, and it's nice, one syllable, it's good calling, so.
Yeah, very short and sweet. So one of the things about Higgs is that he is an adopted companion, and we talked a little bit about, when we've been in the studio, about the fact that if you are going to adopt a pet or adopt a companion animal, thanks, Alon, that one of the things that you have to think a little bit about beforehand is how your adopted companion will come home to you, because the Oregon Humane Society, which is one of the places that many people go for adoption, has a policy that's not hard and fast, but it is somewhat of a rule, that adopted pets can't be taken home by bicycle. So when you adopted Higgs, how did you get him home? And I think you had a previous pet that you also adopted and couldn't bring home on the bicycle?
Actually, my previous pet, we'll just call her Betty because that was her name. I picked her up, I think it must have been 1994. And they had a process, had to meet all your family members, this and that. And
wow.
And, or children. So we had children in the house and then we met the children and it was going to be fine. And they approved it. And then the next day I came back to get her. I'd say it's probably 5 miles from my house, but is a dog not the type of creature that likes to walk 5 miles?
Yeah.
I think that's what a dog is all about. So I thought, well, here's the moment. I'm going to go pick up my dog, and we're going to walk home together. I biked out there, and they were like, okay, awesome. Here's your dog. You know, you do the thing. You get all this stuff and sign the papers, and we walked away. And about, like, 2 or 3 blocks later, she was like, let's, why don't we run? We're
wow.
psyched. Like, I'm out of there. She was very sporty, big dog, like, really ready to run, kind of a pointer, wire hair pointer mix. And I just thought, well, let's give it a shot. I sat on my bike, and she was like, yes, this is it. And she just trotted as a natural, like, right next to the bike all the way home.
Wow.
Just like, that's what she wanted. And I think it's part of it is she's just been sitting in this sort of uncomfortable place for a while. And up comes a person who's going to provide something, and you just sort of adapt.
Yeah. Mm.
And obviously wanted to run. So
yeah.
It worked really well with her, and no questions there. So when I went to meet Higgs and potentially, I actually didn't really think I would take him home. I was trying to be extremely rational and I was going to come home and think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I went in there and the person who helped me was like, well, do you want to take him home today? And I was hesitant, actually. I was concerned. He was really unhealthy looking, honestly. He had lost a bunch of his fur and he had a lot of scabs. He had fleas. Mm. He was in the picture on the website. He was fluffy and looking kind of, you know.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, they do that on purpose. He looked awesome. He was so cute. But I went in there and he had the kennel cough. He had fleas. He had scabs. He was not really looking great. He was malnourished. It was, and I thought, oh boy, can I handle this? That was my hesitation. And then, it didn't take long. I was like, well, this also is not right to be unhealthy and suffering and in a place where it's not a lot of love available and
right.
a soft, good place. And to get rid of the fleas, you got to get out of there.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I'll take him today. And then, okay, so time to go, sign all the papers, talk it out. And then, okay, we'll walk you to your car. And I said, I don't have a car. I have a bike with a basket and we can walk. And they said, oh, no, that's not okay. We have a policy and that's not going to work. And I actually didn't, I wish that they would trust you more. I said, well, we can walk. And if it doesn't work, I'll call a friend or I'll just go to my friend. She's nearby. No, that's not going to work. Okay. Well, I called a friend and in Higgs's case, I understand. It was a nice day in November, but he wasn't really well.
Mm.
So, I mean, a car, you really can't beat the car for being a warm, cozy, he can sit on your lap. It's got a kind of, appropriate use of a car once in a while. So,
yeah.
And to have a dog, you almost need to have somebody who could rescue you in a car once in a while. I don't know. I wouldn't want someone to be denied. And
yeah.
I'm sure if you really wanted a dog, you could say, well, I'll come back on this day and I'll get a taxi or whatever.
Right.
And you could probably make it work. So I don't think it's discrimination. And they do a great job. And it's not a perfect situation that they begin with. So I think they do a great job.
And our time is nearing its end, unfortunately. But maybe a quick question about cats. I feel like cats have been ignored in this show, and I'm wondering if you've ever traveled with a cat.
I did, actually, and as it nears the end, it was actually a 22-year-old cat who was a friend of mine was wanting to leave the country and move at the end of her cat's life, and the cat was just hanging in there. So 22-year-old cat, and she asked us if we wouldn't keep the cat and care for it in its final time. And the cat was happy with us for about 2 months. She was blind, but she loved her dinner, and she loved to get pet, and she was quite happy. However, at one time she just started having seizures, and something seemed really not right. So I wrapped her up in a blanket, and I got her all wind jacket on top of her, and I put her in my basket, and I transported her to the vet. And I walked into the vet with my bundled up cat, and I said, we need help.
Yeah.
And then they said, okay, we'll go in this room. And I went in the room and waited in there, and that way you do in the vet for a little longer than you ever wish.
Yeah.
And she died right in my arms.
Wow.
And it was just kind of a weird and sort of a sweet thing in its way.
Yeah.
But I guess I tell the story and I think of it as, you know, people think, well, why would you carry your cat on a bicycle? Well, sometimes there's just, that's what you do.
Yeah.
That's what you have available. That's how you do it. And, you know, you make it work. You wrap them in the blanket and you keep them warm and you keep them safe and you do what you can. So,
thank you, Sarah. We've been speaking with Sarah Stout about pet and furry companions and bicycles. Thanks so much for coming to the studio with your dog, Higgs. In the second half of the show, we'll pivot to the issue of plastic waste, and we'll be joined by Jocelyn Gaudi-Carell of the GoBox Reusable Container Service. Welcome back. You're listening to The Bike Show, broadcast from the KBOO studio in Portland, Oregon. Today, it's in the studio is myself and my co-host, Alon Robb. And in this second half, we're going to be speaking with Jocelyn Gaudi-Carell, owner of the GoBox Reusable Takeout Food and Drinkware Service. She's working to eliminate the need for single-use plastic disposables. After a decade of working towards sustainable transportation solutions, including launching bike share programs across the U.S., Jocelyn is a believer in the positive power of sharing systems. She's committed to a triple bottom line business. GoBox is a 1% for the planet contributor and working toward B Corp certification. And Jocelyn holds a BA in Business Administration and Marketing from the St. Edward's University in Austin, Texas. Welcome and thanks so much for being on the show, Jocelyn.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me today. I'm really excited to speak with you both.
That's great. You should tell us how you pronounce your two second names so we get them right for the rest of the show.
Yeah, thank you. It's Jocelyn Gaudi-Carell.
Gaudi-Carell. Okay, Alon, you try that one. Gaudi-Carell.
I'll pass, but I'll think of the Spanish artist, architect, if that's the connection, the second name.
Okay.
And good morning to you, Jocelyn.
Hello, Alon. Good to talk to you. It's good to talk with you again.
So maybe you should start us out a little bit with about GoBox, how it started, and how it works.
Sure. So GoBox is a system of reusable containers and cups that eliminate the need for single-use plastic. So we launched back in 2011. Actually, the business was first launched by a woman named Laura Weiss. And she worked in downtown Portland and would frequent the food carts and really enjoyed the easy access to really delicious food from all those small businesses, but was dismayed with the overflowing trash bins that were located nearby. And so Laura devised a circular system, that allowed for these reusable, durable containers to be used instead of the single-use plastic. So GoBox is a subscription service, meaning that individuals or households sign up to use GoBox, and then they download our mobile app, and they use that app to check out our reusables from any of the nearly 100 partnering vendors that we work with across Portland. And then when they're done with that reusable, when they either, finish their meal and they're done with the container, or they're finished their coffee and their reusable cup is empty, then they find a GoBox drop site. And they again use the mobile app to check the container or cup back into our system.
Mm-hmm.
And then the GoBox team will go around to all those drop sites, and we collect the used reusables, and we wash and sanitize them in a commercial kitchen. And then we restock our food vendors so that the cycle can start again.
And you are one of the people who've enriched our lives with many bicycle activities, organizations. And I'm wondering if your biking background helped set you up to be a bike business entrepreneur. Maybe you could talk a little bit about your biking background.
Yeah, absolutely. There's kind of two ways that I feel like my biking background has played into what I'm doing now with GoBox. So I acquired the business from Laura last June. I took over. And the first time I learned that GoBox was up for sale and available as an opportunity was in a Facebook group called Women Bike. And Laura was also a cyclist, and she, in fact, designed GoBox in such a way that the delivery and pickup operations were done using a bike and trailer, so that the carbon footprint would be considered and the work that we were doing here to eliminate the single-use plastic. So that was an immediate attraction to me to GoBox as a cyclist and knowing the power that bicycles have to change the world. And then in addition to that, my professional background was in sustainable transportation, and for a number of years I worked with bike share systems and helped to launch bike share systems in communities across the United States. And so my kind of familiarity with sharing systems definitely played into what I saw GoBoxes, which what we're doing is really just sharing containers. And so it was kind of those two parts that played into my interest in taking over at GoBox.
Okay, so I think I'd like to hear a little bit. So most of the time when you think about downtown Portland and the food carts and the sort of lunch businesses that are there, and you usually go to that, noon time, the rush hour happens, or the lunch rush happens. People go, they order their lunch, then they get their lunch put into a GoBox that the restaurant or cart already has on site, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So we partner with food vendors, and we provide them with clean containers or cups that they keep on site. And so they're on demand for folks. When they're ready to order a meal or a beverage to go, they can simply visit one of our participating vendors, pull out the mobile app, and very, very easily check out a reusable instead of having to use a single-use plastic.
Okay. And then the next step would be, okay, so you sit down in a sunny place if you can find one, or in a sheltered place if it's raining, as it is so often in Portland. You eat your lunch, and hopefully you're with a companion, you're having a nice conversation, and then you're done, and you're pretty much done with that use of the GoBox. Do most people then turn them in right away, or is it something that you encourage them to take the GoBox home, rinse it out, and then bring it back to one of the boxes that they'll find through the app at a later time? How does that usually work?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to be a convenient option for our subscribers. So some of our subscribers, they'll eat their lunch, and then they know of a drop site that's on their way back to the office, and so it's very easy for them to just, return the container to the drop site at that time. Perhaps they have leftovers, and so they do want to take their GoBox home and hold on to it for another day or two so they can finish their meal before they return it. We don't require our subscribers to rinse or wash our containers before they return them. It's always nice when we see subscribers that have done so. But it's really, whatever is most convenient for them to either, return it at that moment or return it the next time they're nearby a drop site. More and more, we're trying to expand outside of being a strictly lunch option.
Okay.
And we are now working with a lot of brick and mortar restaurants and grocery stores as well. So GoBox is an option for people to order meals any time of the day. And a lot of the food vendors that we've been launching with recently, they're also finding space for in their location to make it very, very easy for regular customers, basically, that are coming to order food. So they'll, you know, order their food, they'll get it in a reusable, they'll take it to go, and then the next time they come back to order again from that restaurant, there's a drop site there, so they return the container, and then they immediately check out another reusable.
Awesome.
And is there a list of the places where one can find the boxes? And also, for those of us like me who never had a phone, a cell phone or smartphone, what mm-hmm. do we do if we don't have the application?
Yeah, that's a good question. So you can find participating vendors on our website at goboxpdx.com, or if you download our free mobile app, they're all listed there as well. You know, for folks that don't have smartphones, we're trying to determine a best way to integrate our service to work with them. You know, when GoBox first launched, we were not a mobile app equipped service. We were token based, and so people would actually kind of carry around this physical token, and they would exchange that token in for a reusable, and then when they returned the reusable, they would get a token back. But you know, it was pretty heavy handed for the food vendors and for the drop site hosts to have to manage. The mobile app makes it much more efficient. So it's kind of a catch 22 because the mobile app has allowed us to expand more quickly. It's a much easier system for our food vendors to implement because they don't have to have tokens on hand or really do anything other than just see a confirmation screen on the consumer's phone to hand them a reusable. So we are trying to brainstorm creative ways that would allow folks that don't have smartphones to integrate into our, or to use our service, because we definitely don't want that to be a hurdle.
Okay. You're listening to the KBOO Bike Show, broadcast from the KBOO studios in Portland, Oregon, 90.7. And we're speaking with Jocelyn Gaudy-Quirel, owner of the unique GoBox reusable takeout food and drinkware service. I think it's time for that question of how you could explain a little bit more of how you use bikes as part of the GoBox system, and also what kind of bikes you found work best for what you need to do.
Sure. So we have found that bikes, using a bike and trailer, makes it much more efficient to visit our food vendors. So when we're visiting our food vendors, it's a pretty quick visit. You know, we will in front, we'll kind of reference our admin system that helps us track our inventory. So we know approximately how many clean containers our food vendors have in stock. So it's very easy for us to grab some additional cleans to get them back up to their maximum stocking par, basically, to last them for the week. And we have just found that a bike and trailer, yeah, just makes it much easier to roll up to that food cart pod. We park the bike, and then we can really easily visit those food vendors there. Rather than having to drive around a heavy commercial vehicle and find parking and have to deal with the potential for parking tickets and all that other. So, you know, Portland is a great city to ride a bike in. Yeah. And Portland's a pretty great city to be a bike-based business. I will say that there are some challenges this summer getting back and forth across the bridges when they were under construction with our trailer. But by and large, it not only is makes smart business sense, but of course supports our core business value of trying to have as minimal environmental impact as possible. And so we utilize a Zero One e-bike, and it's a great little bike. It's kind of modeled after a Japanese style bike. So it's a step through frame. It has a very large front rack, and the battery power definitely makes it easier on our bodies to transport the trailer that is full of containers around town. So it's been great. When I acquired GoBox, we were just utilizing non e-bikes, and it was much tougher on our bodies. So the having that little bit of battery boost makes it just that much more efficient and friendly for us.
And I'm curious about the environmental impact of the food carts. Has anyone, maybe somebody with a lot of time on their hands, has figured out how many plates or boxes are thrown away each day? And I'm wondering about the boxes you use. Even with being washed and sanitized, how more environmentally friendly are they than disposable?
Yeah, so it's hard to get an accurate count of how many single-use plastics the food and beverage industry goes through a day, but it's a lot. Basically, we, humans are adding 8 million metric tons of plastic to our marine environments every single year. And that's on top of the estimated 150 million metric tons that are already circulating in the oceans. A really significant source of all that plastic is food and beverage containers, cutlery, straws. You know, all of those items are within the top 10 items found and collected during beach cleanups. So it's a significant problem that we really need to address if we are going to, you know, help to cure the planet of this problem. From where I stand, everything that is manufactured or exists has inherent value. And for us to think that the raw materials, the energy, and the time that it took to produce a product, a single-use plastic product in our case here, which is used for such a short period of time before we throw it, quote unquote, away, seems like an incredible waste and a disrespect of the raw materials and the energy that went into the production of that product. So our durable containers are made of a polypropylene number 5. So it is a plastic product, but it's a very durable plastic product. And there's a number of reasons why we have chosen to use it. They're pretty lightweight, they're easy to clean, they're stackable, so it works really well for our food vendors to be able to store them easily in their spaces, often which are, you know, they don't have a lot of extra space to offer us. And the price point is such that we can kind of keep the costs for participating in GoBox very reasonable and approachable for a lot of people. So reusable dishware, over a period of time, will use far less energy and resources than a disposable. Even with the energy and water needed to use them, the overall environmental impact is substantially less. The city of Portland has some information on their website that says in a typical restaurant setting, you know, reusable dishware will be reused several thousand times. And even the most energy intensive products like ceramics, they surpass a break even point after about 100 uses.
Wow.
Our math says that our containers start to net positive environmental impact after maybe the 20th to the 50th use. And they're durable, be used up to 1,000 times before we have to retire them from service.
That is absolutely awesome.
Is still kind of a guesstimate, everything from like how much single-use plastic are we adding to the environment to, you know, how many times does it have to be reduced. The bottom line here is that durables are significantly more environmental friendly than single-use disposables.
Yeah, that's great. So one of my pet peeves, or actually it's more like an emotional response to seeing the trash containers filled with coffee cups that people still, I honestly believe that so many people believe that those paper plastic lined cups are recyclable, and they clearly are not. And so that was why I'm so excited with the news that you recently came out with a reusable, a durable cup. So talk a little bit about how that came about.
Yeah, so I mean, it was just a very natural extension to GoBox to introduce a reusable cup to our system. We did a lot of market research to determine a product that we thought was going to be really durable, and I really wanted a product that wasn't plastic, you know, particularly because we're trying to avoid it. even if it's not single use. And you know, there are some concerns around the chemical composition of some of the plastics out there,
right.
and how they interact with hot beverages like coffee or tea. So we are sourcing a product that is produced by a manufacturer in the UK called eCoffee Cup, and they're made of a bamboo fiber, cornstarch, and then they have like 2 or 3% memaline, which is a plastic product that kind of helps to bind everything together.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very, very durable. They will be able to be used many, many, many hundreds of times. And you know, we've only had them. We launched them in April for Earth Day, or a few days after Earth Day. And our first cafe that we launched with was Nosa Familia at their Zero Waste Cafe in Division, on Division Street. And since then, we have expanded to work with New Seasons on Williams and in Woodstock. Grand Central Bakery in Woodstock also has our cups. And then we're going to launch with New Seasons Concordia. And with La Luna Cafe, which is in Southeast, we're going to have the cups available for them within the next few days. So we've kind of, it's been a slow rollout, kind of a pilot program. One of the interesting aspects that we're dealing with here in our reuse program is we need the products to be attractive enough that people are excited to use them, but not so excited to hold on to them. You know, we really need them
okay.
to turn them for it to make it work. So we're in an interesting space where we're trying to find a product that people like but don't like so much that they keep. That was a little bit of a concern I had with these cups, that because they're really cool. You know, they have this they're all black with a black lid. We're trying to make it kind of turn the colorway on the head of the ubiquitous like white coffee cup. It has minimal branding and like a silicone lid, but I'm happy to report that we've seen a pretty high utilization rate at a number of our food vendors. I forgot to mention Ford Food and Drink, which is also on Division Street, has our cups, and they're in fact our busiest cup vendor. They're going through 20 or so cups a week right now, which has just been so great to see. And it's great to see that our cups are returning to our drop sites as well. So our whole system is designed to encourage correct behavior, and such that you check a reusable out, and then it's kind of, you know, it's on your account
right.
until you check that reusable back in. And I'm happy to report people are using the system correctly. So it's been great to see.
And listeners, I know I plan to do this, can ask businesses of their choice to look into this wonderful venture. I'm wondering about some of the other groups you are involved with. You founded a few wonderful projects. Can you tell us about those?
Outside of GoBox?
Yeah, like the Komorabi Cycling Team, the WTF Bike Explorers, you know, the Oregon.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, bikes are such a big part of my life. And you know, outside of what I'm doing with GoBox, I look for opportunities to build community around two-wheel transportation mm-hmm. or recreation. So in my free time, I work with a group called WTF Bike Explorers. And WTF stands for Women, Trans, and Femme. And what the WTF Bike Explorers is doing is trying to create space for cyclists that self-identify are looking for camaraderie with other self-identifying WTF cyclists. You know, the cycling industry and non-industry, you know, just the culture and community is pretty male-centric, can be macho at times. And I know myself, when I was just getting into the cycling community, I felt the need to adapt and change myself, and in order to fit in and be accepted, and it was tough, you know. It was a removal of who my true identity was in order to partake in something that I really wanted to, which was a strange juxtaposition. And you know, it's not a matter of calling out. What we try to do is not create animosity and necessarily blame what has been done as wrong, but we're trying to create space and provide opportunities where people that have had a hard time finding their group, their tribe, their community within the cycling community, to give them an opportunity to talk to other people that might feel similar. And we share resources. Our group is really, the WTF Bike Explorers is pretty focused on adventure cycling, bike packing, or touring. And so that's kind of our primary focus. We're focusing on providing resources, building community, trying to get more people to lead rides so that we can continue to grow the community. We've, you know, been around for a couple of years. We've held summits every year whereby we invite, or not invite, but we hold space for 150 WTF to come and spend the weekend together and talk about a really wide-ranging topics, everything from, you know, bike maintenance all the way to more cultural sensitive. You know, how do we provide safer spaces and be cognizant of you know, those people that will be riding with us and what considerations we should be providing them to make sure that they feel welcomed and comfortable and a part of what we're trying to build here.
Yes. So, thanks for all you do, Jocelyn. So you've been listening to The Bike Show, broadcast from the KBOO studio in Portland, Oregon at 90.7. All of our shows are available as podcasts on bikeshow.portlandtransport.com, as well as iTunes. My name is April Streeter. My co-host is Alon Robb. Thanks very much, Jocelyn, for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
And thanks also to our guest, Sarah Stout, and to our engineer, Claire Risciotto, also our web host, Chris Smith. We're wishing all of our listeners safe and joyful rides.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Around the world at KBOO.fm. It's time for Jazz Lives.